Today on Wings, poet Nikki Giovanni talks with Margaret Prescott about America's Black history, Black present, and Black future.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Sojourner Truth escaped from slavery with her infant daughter in 1826. She was an activist and powerful speaker for the abolition of slavery and for women's rights. Margaret Prescott hosts a radio program called Sojourner Truth from community radio station KPFK in Los Angeles. Here are excerpts from her recent conversation with renowned poet Nikki Giovanni.
Nikki Giovanni is a poet, activist, professor, mother. She's been given the keys to more than 24 cities. She's the author of at least 27 books. Her first book of poetry was published in 1968 entitled Black Feeling, Black Talk. Nikki Giovanni is a university distinguished professor in English at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. Nikki Giovanni, welcome.
Thank you.
You grew up in the segregated South?
Yes.
Did you realize that you were living under segregation as a child?
Everybody black knew, you know, that there was segregation. I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. My father and mother moved to Cincinnati, but Cincinnati was a segregated Dow drugstores wouldn't serve you, and cities were redlined. And the awareness of it is like the awareness of any other evil in the world. You know it. You know you don't want to be a part of it, but it's not going to warp you. I mean, one of the first poems that I wrote describing it, my childhood as I saw it, was called Nikki Rosa, which is what they used to call me. And what I was saying in that poem is that all the while I was quite happy, you know, despite the fact that, for example, under Lyndon Johnson, you know, we're going to get and especially Richard Nixon, we're going to get this whole idea of poverty. Well, you didn't realize you lived in a poverty area until you saw the poverty map. And then you went like, oh, my goodness, we were poor.
Yeah.
Because everybody else was poor. And yeah. So looking at poverty is going to be very different when you're inside looking out. I don't know. I'm not a sociologist. And I don't really know what the impact of youngsters nowadays, both black American as well as our immigrant youngsters, mm-hmm. how the impact of having the eyes of the world on you, how that's going to affect the personality. But if you look at the 60s generation, you look at us. I'm 70 now, but you look at those of us born
wow.
in 1943, somewhere along there. We are coming out of the war, and we're going to go through, of course, Brown versus Topeka, mm-hmm. and we're going to go through the reaction of the country to that, which is going to be Emmett Till, and then you're going to go back into Daisy Bates in 1957, and we're going to get to 60 when we're 18, mm-hmm. 19, 20. Then you're going to get Greensboro, and we're going to start the sit-in generation. Fortunately for all of us, we never believed what other people had to say about us. And I'm not so sure that youngsters today haven't incorporated the dislike that the nation has for us.
Yeah.
So that's not good. I'm just 3 weeks, by the way, coming from Accra, Ghana, because my former student, Kwame Alexander, does a literacy program. And uh-huh. he called me like last year, because it takes about a year to get ready for it. And he said, Nikki, I need a keynote speaker for my conference. And I laughed. I said, oh, Kwame, I'm so glad you called me, because I know everybody. I said, what did you have in mind? And he said, Nikki, I knew what he had in mind. It's like, okay. So I went and got my shots. For me, of course, it was the yellow fever is a booster shot. And my passport stays up to par. And I want to say to everybody listening in, to everybody that you know, get a passport. If somebody says, what do you want for Christmas? Say a passport. If somebody says, what do you want for your birthday? Say a passport. Because you can't be a citizen of the United States today, let alone, well, you have to have a passport.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that you have to have, because today, as we are sitting here talking, is voting day. You
yeah.
have to have your voting card.
Mm-hmm.
Just go. I don't care, who doesn't want. No, you have to vote. You have to go, and if you don't do anything, write your mother's name in. You have to go and register that you were here and that you care. And, of course, we know that there are good people everywhere who are undocumented, and there are things that they're going to have difficulty taken care of. But for those of us who are native born or who can show that we have mm-hmm. a right, you got to have a passport and you got to have your voting card.
Yeah, and I mean, we've just seen the Supreme Court decision taking away such a key part of the Voting Rights Act. I mean, the attack really on the right to vote.
Sure.
So you're absolutely yeah. right on time with
that. You know, I think the dumbest thing on God's earth, actually, is that prisoners are not allowed to vote. Because, maybe you committed a horrible crime, but we didn't execute you. And mm-hmm. since we didn't, you are still subject to the Constitution of the United States and its 10 amendments. Therefore, you should participate. How do we expect people to go to jail, to prison for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, 10 years, or some cases more, and then come out and be good citizens when we've denied them citizenship rights? Because they're still citizens. And you say, well, you know, they have to be punished. Well, you've punished them. But punishing them, you know, you're not allowed to not feed them. You're not allowed to beat them, no matter what Clarence Thomas might think. The Fourth Amendment does apply to prisoners. Mm-hmm. And we need to keep them involved in the community. What better way than that they vote?
And also the assumption is that you're the same person when you go in.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, you know what, if you're in prison and after a year, you're not political, you're crazy. you know, you done lost your mind.
Yeah.
On Wings, you are listening to Margaret Prescott interviewing poet Nikki Giovanni.
You clearly were involved in the civil rights movement, the Black movement, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Sure.
I was in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration in 2009, I guess mm-hmm. it was. And a number of the former SNCCRs, as they call themselves, you know, were there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people expected, oh, now we got the revolution, we got a Black president. Well, he's president of the United States, right? Not a civil rights leader. But I just wanted you to say a little bit about the significance of that for you.
I was asked, you know, was the election of Barack Obama in 8 Martin Luther King's dream? And my answer was no.
No.
No, it wasn't. Martin Luther King was a leader and Barack Obama's a politician.
Yeah.
And I regret that he counts so poorly. And mm-hmm. he continues to count so poorly. I'm not a politician. I don't run for office. I'm just a poet. But he had to know that there were going to be people that were going to oppose him no matter what. So what you have to do, what any good politician does, and what the right wing has done and what the Tea Party has done, is they've shored up their base. But Mr. Obama has not shored up his base. And I am personally, and it means nothing, but I'm just personal. I was a friend of Rap Brown. I'm personally disappointed that he has not extended presidential pardon to Rap Brown.
That's
or
right.
Russ Means. Why
mm-hmm.
not? Because he's not going to be any more loved by Ted Cruz than if he didn't.
Yeah.
So what does he care?
Leonard Peltier.
I was going to say Leonard, yeah.
Yeah.
What does Obama care whether these people like him or not?
Mm-hmm.
Because the people that voted for you, the people that worked for him, the people that thought, you know, as we move into a more inclusive world, this is your base.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember George Bush used to say that, you know, and I'm no fan of Mr. Bush's. And he had that dinner and he said to the people there, some people call you fat cats, but I call you my base.
He knew it. I mean, he knew it and he worked
it. It was his base and that's who
yeah.
he took care of.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Obama needed to take care
of his base.
And that's been a colossal failure. So mm-hmm. I'm very, very sorry. His presidency has not been what it should have been. And in my opinion, he's in like the bottom third of the presidents because the country has suffered for lack of definition. Barack should have known that everybody's not going to love him. So then you have to love the people who love you. That's your responsibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so tell us, just stepping back a little bit, about your early involvement in what would be called the movement.
Well, I mean, again, we're all, I think for my generation, finish your sentence, Nikki. For my generation, the one most outstanding event was the murder of Emmett Till. Because mm. Emmett was just a little bit older than we were, actually the same age as my sister.
Emmett Till was just 14 years old when he visited Mississippi in 1955. He spoke to a white woman in a grocery store, then was tortured and shot by her husband and his brother. Till's mother held an open casket funeral in Chicago, creating public outrage about the horrors of lynching.
The murder of Emmett Till was so horrible that those of us who are going to watch something like that, we're saying, oh, if this is what is in line for us, then we have to stop it now. Mm-hmm. It has to stop mm-hmm. here. And, well, of course, the murder of Emmett Till was the response to Brown versus Board of Education. And Mississippi took it, you know, very, very seriously. And they killed that 14-year-old. Yeah. And so we watched that. And then, of course, 1957, which is only going to be 2 years later, we've got Daisy Bates and the Little Rock Nine, and yeah. watching them spin on Miss Minnie John. And again, now we're in school. I'm in school in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're in school, and we're saying, oh, so this is what? They're going to murder, and when they're not murdering, they're spitting on us and they're throwing things on us. That had to stop. And I am now pleased to be a member of Delta Sigma Theta sorority. In 1957, Jean Noble, who was our president at that point, put on her white suit and got on a train and went to Little Rock and asked Miss Daisy Bates, what can we do? What can Delta do? And Miss Bates said, well, the Little Rock Nine are not going to have Christmas. And Jean Noble said, well, we were at that point like 75,000 women of Delta Sigma Theta. Mm-hmm. We'll see to it that the Little Rock Nine have Christmas.
Coming up, you'll hear discussion about Fisk and Spelman Universities, two of the 103 historically black colleges and universities found mainly in the southern U.S.
In 1960, I attended Fisk University as an early entrant. In Nashville, of course, the school that started the sit-ins was Tennessee State, but State was a state school, and so they just started to dismiss the students that were leaders. They just dismissed them. And the students at Fisk, Diane Nash, John Lewis, the congressman, was there. Jim Bevel was at Baptist Theological. Mm-hmm. We all said, because I'm not going to get there till the next year, are saying, well, we're a private school. So they can get rid of the Tennessee State kids, but they can't get rid of us. And that's why Fisk took it up. And Diane Nash, who is probably one of the truly unsung heroines of the civil rights movement.
She really is.
Oh, yeah. Just an incredible, incredible woman. And Diane led Fisk University, and we took up the fight in Nashville.
There is so much that is intertwined in making us, you know, who we are. Mm-hmm. And just the era that you grew up in, I mean, your whole experience that you just described, and for our audience, it is the great Nikki Giovanni here in studio discussing this with us, and the impact that that had then on your interest in writing. At what point did you know you really wanted to write?
Well, I'm a Fisk University graduate. You know, that's what we do. Fisk had one of the great sociology departments. I'm not a sociology major. I was a history major. Du Bois was a Fiskite. You know, I mean, that's what we do, you know.
Okay.
If I had my way, Fisk would be a woman's school, and we should be. And I would keep it right down to just the basic liberal arts, you know, your basic chemistry and math and history and, you know, just to kind of give a view.
You turn Fisk into a Spelman?
Well, you know, now you don't want to start this because we think that Spelman already was a Fisk.
Okay.
And Fisk has lost it. Well, I don't think that we can attract enough men to keep Fisk co-educational, but that is another long discussion.
Yeah.
Because when Fisk was started, the one thing that we did was we went against the grain. Mm-hmm. We started as a co-educational school at a time when schools were either male or female. Mm-hmm. We were always, of course, interracial. Anybody, you know, we did not discriminate. Anybody could come. But at some point, we began to lose funding and, to some degree, it's fair to say, identity. And again, I'm not upset with the president, but that $10 million or so that he gave to all of the HBCUs was a joke. Because we fine companies for wrongdoing more than that. We just fine, you know, one of the hedge funds, you know, $13 billion.
Yeah.
So, you know, $10 million was absolutely nothing. I would like to see Fisk become a competitor of both Spelman and Bennett, because as we train and educate women, the men will follow.
So you're saying that you're going to Fisk and the training you had in Fisk, the focus and the era, all of that played a movement then into Nikki Giovanni, the national treasure poet.
Well, see, that's very nice. But, you know, really, what could I do? Well, the one thing that I'm good with is words. I mean, that's about all I'm good with. And so I felt that I needed to make sure as much as I could do it, that my words were true.
Yeah.
That my words described things that other people couldn't describe, because I'm not Bob Moses. I couldn't have gone into Mississippi and done the math camp, which Bob Moses to us was a god.
And but now his work with the Algebra Project and whatnot.
I mean, that's somebody else who we need that movie of that man. And so I just thought, if this is what I can do, then I should do it to the best of my ability. And the key that's important to me is honest, because you can't live in a fantasy world, you know. And I just mentioned I'm just coming from Accra. And if you go to Accra right now, what you're going to see, and one respect, is going to break your heart, because there's still a lot of poor people. You know, we have a water problem there. We have an electricity problem there.
Yeah.
But we have a great people there. And whatever the people are, from that point, from Cape Coast Castle to Jamestown or Barbados, as we come across that ocean, what we have is the birth of a new people. So we have to understand that we are not just the Ashanti kingdom.
Yeah.
We are also the people we see today. And that's the people we see today have that same kindness, that same resilience, that same vision. And we have to find a way to tap into that strength. Because if we just compared Accra to New York, maybe it's not the worst idea to have a dirt road. Maybe it's not the worst idea to try to figure out how do we use daylight again, that everything doesn't have to run after midnight. And I never did understand, let me just be really honest about that, how anybody could say anybody black is lazy.
Oh, please.
You know, we stayed, but you hear it.
Yeah, all the time.
And we stayed with the people. We did not stay at the old Ambassador Hotel downtown in the high-rise. We stayed with the people. And it was just a really interesting thing, because the people are up at 5:15 in the morning. You start to hear them stir. Light is going to come up about 5:30, 5:35, and they're working. They're cooking. They're washing clothes. They're getting their wares out. Mm-hmm. The women are putting bottles on their heads, and the young men, and they're going to walk out, and they're going to sell that. They're on the highways that don't have any lines in them, and somehow or another they're walking and getting that done. And I just thought, what a great people. I was there only 10 days, and I never heard any rancor. No one is cursing anybody out. Nobody is banging, you know. And I thought, wow, this is a great thing. Really? I hadn't been in Ghana in like 30 years. And what I wanted to say, because I was the keynote speaker, I wanted to talk about slavery. Well, of course, Africa is embarrassed by slavery, and they still are. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous to be embarrassed because they didn't do it. These people that we're talking to didn't do it. So we have to say, what have we learned, and how have we learned it? Because black Americans are fabulous people. And that does not exclude Barbadians or, you know, anybody. Don't misunderstand. But that journey through Middle Passage, of course, is also our journey to Mars. It's our journey through space. Because human beings going from a known to an unknown with no landmarks to keep them human, we have to say, how did they do that and remain sane when they got to the other side? Yeah. So this is the Black American journey. And I just wanted to share that, because I would love for Ghanaian scholars at Legon University to start to look at Middle Passage.
Yeah.
You know, we look at it all the time. But I would like to see the African view. Did somebody actually say to those people enslaved, Godspeed? That's what I'm asking.
So that resilience that you're talking about and surviving, I actually did go see, I saw The Butler, and I also did see 12 Years a Slave.
I didn't like The Butler, by the way, before we go too far.
Okay.
I really didn't like The Butler, because there could be nobody in the position of power that man was in who didn't pass the information that he heard along to somebody, to his pastor. I mean, how can you show the butler of the White House without showing his relationship to the Pullman porters? Because he's on a train at some point. We know that the Pullman porters were the bankers of the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And so how do we get this man? And what we end up with is a movie that's showing his wife. This man married a link. He had a great job. Do you know the Lynx? I don't know.
No, I don't.
It's a group. Yeah. They're wonderful women. Uh-huh. This man married an AKA or a Delta, but she was also a Lynx. She had to be. I mean, I don't know this man. Yeah. You know what? But this man has a steady job at the White House. So he is an important man in his community. He has a church that he goes to, right? Now, he is not a college graduate, and so he is not going to be in a fraternity.
Yeah.
But he is in some kind of lodge that he meets with other men. Why didn't we see him talking to his brothers, to his friends? Why did we see just his wife is going out with Terrence Howard? And how can we dare to have Terrence Howard, who is a beautiful man, not have a tooth? That was just so insulting.
And how nice the Nixons were. Inviting them to the
and it's like, please give me and I said that to a friend of mine, you know, if this was a story about a Jewish butler who worked in a Nazi household, we would have seen him passing information to other Jews. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what
and
you're
so
saying.
And so I resented the fact that all of a sudden we have this guy, like he's just a big Uncle Tom, and he has this woman who is just like a nothing. That's not the way that our society works. I don't get to write movies, and you can see why, because I would have walked off the set.
Our guest in studio is the great poet Nikki Giovanni and her brand new book, Chasing Utopia, talking about family, her mom and food and the movement and love and about everything. And anybody picking up any of your material can relate to it. I'm truly convinced of that.
Oh, thank you.
And then I read, like, Then My Phone Trembles.
Ah, yes.
Oh, Lord. You know that so well.
Yes. As the mother of a son, actually, but that I think mothers must worry also about daughters.
Oh, yeah. But, I have a daughter.
Yeah.
One.
When the phone rings at midnight, you know, I'm a civil rights person. So I've never had a phone ring at that hour that it wasn't bad news.
Yeah.
Whether it was Robert Kennedy being shot here in Los Angeles or whether it was some friend being in jail. But you always worry that it's somebody telling you, as Trayvon Martin, and among others, that your son is dead.
Yeah.
And so when the phone rings at midnight, we pray.
And then in Allowables, the kind of tenderness, and I'm trying to find it here. It starts out, I killed a spider, not a murderous brown recluse, nor even a black widow. And if the truth were told, this was only a small sort of papery spider who should have run when I picked up the book, but she didn't. You know, then it goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. And she scared me and I smashed her. I don't think I'm allowed to kill something because I am frightened.
Yeah.
I live in the country on a mountain.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've lived there now for 25 years. And I got to know my neighbors because a couple of squirrels were dead when I was going down the mountain one day, you know, 25 years ago. And there were a couple of dead squirrels. And I made up a flyer and stuck it in all the posts. I was, please don't murder the squirrels. And my neighbors, I've never hit a critter. And I'm very, you know, knock on wood on that. I've never hit a critter. And so I go down the mountain very slowly. But my neighbors like, Nikki, I'm not murdering squirrels. Well, somebody is. Because the squirrels were here and they're crossing the road because they don't know cars. They're doing what they were always doing. And squirrels run and stop, which helps them for most enemies. Mm-hmm. But for an automobile, it doesn't help them because it gets them right in the middle of the automobile. So you have to go down the mountain about 20 miles an hour and you have to keep looking on both sides. So I'm trying to, and again, it's something you work on because I did. I killed that little spider and I do have black widows. And what I do is put in my garbage, I have of course, mothballs, which keeps them out. And they don't like it.
Yeah.
And in my mailbox, I have mothballs for the same reason. Otherwise, I'd reach into my mailbox and there would be a spider and it would bite me and I would have a problem. But I don't want to spray it. I wanted something that would make them say, well, maybe I shouldn't live here. So you're working on it.
Yeah.
You know, we're just human. We have issues and we make mistakes. But I just want to keep working on trying to be a better human being. And that's what I write about. I just keep, you just think we can do better. I can do better. And I can't ask other people to do better if I can't. But you can't kill things because you don't like them. We have coyotes.
Yeah.
And I have dogs. I have a little dog. She's a Yorkie.
Oh, what's her name?
Her name is Alex.
Alex.
And Alex is sick right now, so she's on prednisone, so she weighs 13 pounds.
Yeah.
But she's normally about 7 pounds. So the coyotes, if I let her out at night, the coyotes would come
in.
They would eat her.
Yeah.
But the coyotes are hungry.
Yeah.
So I know that I cannot feed the coyotes. I'm not going to leave food out. I'm going to close my garbage. But I'm also not going to let my dog out.
Because she'll get eaten.
But I'm not going to hurt the coyotes because actually they are fairly good neighbors, you know. And so you just have to be careful. You have to turn your lights on. And we live with things. Again, Americans are you would think that we were a cowardly nation, the way we are constantly destroying something because we don't like it. I don't like drones killing people.
Yeah.
I just don't like the whole idea that anybody can get some kind of assault weapon and come into a mall or, as they've done recently, or come into LAX and shooting people. All of that has to stop. And I don't know why it's so difficult to stop gun violence. That doesn't mean that people won't hurt each other, because people probably will. But the idea that anybody can get an assault weapon and a lot of magazines and walk into a public place and shoot people, says that's an insanity. And the NRA, I mean, that's not what the Constitution says. So I don't know how they get away with that. And I think if people want to quote the Constitution, they ought to read it.
Yeah, and I did want to ask you about violence, because you interact with young people all the time. Mm-hmm. And caregiving has been devalued. You know, that caring, you know, used to be in the community, you're looking out for everybody else's child. What you doing? You know, when your mm-hmm. mama comes home, that kind of thing. Single mothers and their children, fastest growing population of the homeless. Mm-hmm. Mothers are the fastest growing population of people going to prison.
Mm-hmm. But it's very clear, first of all, it's very clear the prison doesn't work. And I mean, these are like longer, you know,
discussions
that make me sound crazy.
Yeah.
But the money we put into prisons really should be put into things like daycare. And obviously we need to pay, okay, let me slow it down and do it this way. School buildings always have to be heated and the water has to be on.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a building that we only use maybe 10 hours a day at most.
Mm-hmm.
School buildings should be open 24 hours a day.
Hmm.
And we should start with, first of all, building in per population, this is not a hard thing to do, so that mothers can drop kids off and we hire teachers, because we hire prison guards to do horrible things to people when we could in fact hire people. Grandmothers, now I'm in the country, so we have grandmothers and grandfathers who actually, if we sent the bus out to pick them up, would cook. And I'm a big fan of beans, because I like beans. I am.
Brown, black, any kind of bean,
if it's
don't
a bean,
matter.
I like it. Christmas beans, you know, speckled beans, I like beans. So if we didn't do anything but every 2 weeks have a different bowl of beans for lunch, the kids would get a healthy lunch. If we didn't do anything but have cornbread, they would get a healthy lunch. And give them lemonade sometimes and a nice something for dessert. We also know if we brought the grandparents in and just had the grandfather sit in the lunchroom, for example, of your junior high school, you know how that would change? For every table, have a grandfather there, just an old man who's going to sit there and tell them stories, and they're going to laugh at him. But they're also going to behave. They're also going to learn this is what a man does. This is what a woman does. Put those people to work. Let those people work for us. But also then give them some space. Make a lounge someplace that they can sit down, they can take a nap, sit in their chair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put them, when the parents get off from work at 6 o'clock, let them come in at 7 or 8 o'clock,
get
and
a little rest.
Let them have a beer. Let them come into the school. Come on, because I'm tired of that hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Let them come into the school and have a beer. They can talk to the teachers. They can talk to the older people. They can take the kids home. Because the building is there and the building's being heated. Did that just make sense?
Yeah,
we're spending money in a way that is being non-productive. And I think that it's time that we realize that we owe each other. I'm tired of billionaires deciding that they've done a good deed because they gave $1 million away, which $1 million didn't do anything. And they are holding on to resources in the community in a way that's just not necessary.
Poet Nikki Giovanni, in conversation with Margaret Prescott on the program Sojourner Truth. For a link to the entire one-hour radio program on SoundCloud, contact SojournerTruthRadio@gmail.com. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our daily news feed on facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden, Wings series producer. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.